Good morning, everybody. Welcome along. My name is Andy Malone. This is my session, The Cloud, Making the Move to the Hybrid World. And I know a number of you are probably thinking, Andy Malone, don't you do security, right? Why are you doing this? This is a sideline. I love Office 365. I've been working with Office 365 now for about 2 and a bit years. And I train it, I consult in it all over Europe and the Middle East. And this is kind of my little baby, would you say. Just to remind you that I like to give love from my sessions. So if you want to accept that love, that's great, but you need to sign up to my Twitter account. So feel free to sign in there. All the videos, all the demos, white papers from all of my sessions you can pick up at Andy Malone. Okay, so just sign up there. I tweeted the link to my SkyDrive last night. So if you just kind of look through my history a little bit, you'll find that link, no problem. So we'll get started. So I hope everybody is enjoying TechEd. It's certainly really nice to be in Madrid. It's one of my favorite European cities. So who am I? Well, I'm an MVP in enterprise security. So like Paula and Marcus and Hussein, my kind of main area of focus is security, which is kind of interesting when you start talking about the cloud, because people have got lots and lots of questions about the cloud and misconceptions about it, which is kind of interesting. I'm based in Stirling in Scotland, which is the home of William Wallace, Freedom, Braveheart, all of that. Although I'm not there very often, I do travel quite extensively. So this particular session is all about making the move to kind of hybrid mode. And there's the whole bunch of reasons which we're going to talk about. What type of company would use hybrid mode in Office 365? Now, if anybody's worked with Office 365 and actually gone into hybrid mode, you know it can be quite a time-consuming type of process. So I will tell you in advance, I've cammed my demos because I've had to edit them because of the time it actually takes to do the tasks. So hopefully, there's nothing worse than going along to one of these sessions, especially with Office 365. You tend to go along to these sessions, and they tend to just show you a whole bunch of slides, and you don't kind of see any demos. So I thought it would be kind of nice to actually see them. So this is kind of the topic areas. There's a whole bunch of seats down here, folks, so do come in and join us. So I'm going to talk about the changing world of software and why you're going to have customers who are going to move to hybrid. Now, if you are a consultant, if you support small, medium-sized business, in fact, if you support any kind of business, hybrid really does have a place. So, of course, moving to hybrid is only available in, for example, e-plans. So if you've got a fairly large to medium-sized customer, they want to move to an e-plan, that's great. And is it just for huge customers? Of course not. A smaller customer could have this functionality if they wanted. This is the first of my two kind of Office E365 sessions. I've got another one tomorrow on identity, and I'm going to explore all the different things like ADFS, DirSync, and talk about some of the new features in DirSync as well. So that's the agenda. So I like to walk around, if you'll forgive me. One of the things about hybrid is the world in which we live, this is the way our world has been for a number of years. So if you've been any kind of IT support person in IT for the past 20-odd years, like me, then this is a very familiar model, the way things used to be, the client-server type relationship. And we're all familiar with this, where you have a bunch of clients. You know, I call it the factory model. You know, the old traditional kind of industrial revolution model where all your workers walk in through the gates on a Monday morning, the gates close behind them, and everything, all your resources, all your assets are secure behind walls. And this is nice, and, you know, this works well here. The client access model, users connect to a central kind of plexus, if you will. You've got... The only issues with this, though, is over the last few years, you've had the situation where we've had this constant refresh. So Microsoft, as you're aware, have this kind of, or had this four-year life cycle, which has radically changed now. So traditionally, this four-year life cycle, you could plan for your hardware. You could say, hey, we're going to deploy Microsoft Windows Server 2008, and I know that that investment is going to last me 4 years. But of course, things are moving on a lot quicker. Hardware technology is moving quicker. Software is moving at lightning pace at the moment. So that refresh is happening on a much faster scale. I mean, within a year, we now have Windows Server 2012 R2, which was typically unheard of in previous times. So that five-year refresh is not really capable, or it's not really suitable anymore. And the thing about this is we all have users with bring your own device. So the model of today is far more complex. So you've got users roaming on different types of devices, whether it's an iPad or a Surface or a phone or whatever type of phone device that you're using. So we really needed a platform that basically encompassed all of these kind of capabilities. And then this was one of the goals of Office 365. So if anybody can remember back to the misty days of BPOS. Remember BPOS? Anybody use that? Business Productivity Online Suite. You know that marketing bag doesn't work at Microsoft anymore, right? Okay. What a stupid name for a product. But anyway, so we have a much more user-friendly name for the product, Office 365. So I actually know somebody that's got a site like this. Okay, so at the moment, it's a very, very complex world that we live in. Now, obviously, there's an old saying, you can't be all things to all men. So my first tip to you is, obviously, Office 365 comes in different flavors. And you're going to deal with different companies. Now, when you come to Microsoft events, we typically, traditionally, talk about thousands of users, hundreds of thousands of users in multi-continent scenarios. Of course, and for the vast majority of us, we're small or medium-sized businesses. You may even have the one-man band, the Joe Soap, the Bob the Builder, who just wants access through a portal. Hey, that's great. There's a solution for this guy. You may have a small business where the office has got a dusty, rusty small business server sat on the floor, and it's all covered in dust. Again, there's a solution for this guy. And that's fine. You can move that type of user to the cloud fairly simply. So we just migrate, and fantastic. And the nice thing about Office 365 is you can migrate using a number of different tools. But when you start getting to the medium and the enterprise-sized businesses, they've already made that investment. They've already spent a whole bunch of cash. And I can tell you, with all the deployments that I've actually done in Office 365, initially a customer will say, hey, we want to move to the cloud. And you go to the customer site, and they'll say, ah, okay, you've got an Exchange server. You've got Active Directory. Okay, well, let's start migrating. I can't tell you how many times the customer, during that migration process, where you've set up hybrid mode temporarily sometimes, they go, you know, this hybrid mode, we actually quite like it. I think we'll keep with it. We'll maybe keep our investment. Maybe for compliance reasons. So maybe you work with a business that requires data to be maintained on-premises. For example, financial markets. I work a lot with pharmaceutical businesses. And they're terribly secretive. So they're saying, yeah, we want to put some stuff in the cloud, but we want to keep some stuff on-prem. Can we do that? Absolutely. That's why we have the benefits of hybrid mode. So size really does matter here. So along comes the Office 365 station wagon. And again, it's all about the different offerings of Office 365. So the K plan's typically a portal, P plan's for small business. It's when you start getting into the E plans, the E3, the E4 plans, that's when things start getting really exciting and very, very flexible. So the changing world of software as well. Now, we've seen how Microsoft are changing their software. So the thing about Office 365, well, first of all, Microsoft Office. You go out and you purchase Office 2003, Office 2007, whatever, and that lasts you a number of years. It was interesting, by the way, do you know the biggest competitor to Office 2013? The biggest competitor to Office 2013 is Office 2007. So it's actually they're competing with their own products, because I buy a product and that's it, I'm going to keep it, it does what I want it to do. And the problem with that is that the users never get to take advantage of the new features of the software. So now what we have is we have really a subscription-based model with software. So with subscription, you get a number of benefits. So you always get the most up-to-date versions of the actual software. Also, bring your own device. So there's different versions, and it's the way that, I don't know if you know Jeremy Chapman, if you get a chance to see Jeremy's sessions. I was with him this morning. So Jeremy, they're talking about new methods to deliver Microsoft Office. Even in the last wave, wave 14 of Office, you had this, if you wanted to download Office 2010, it was this huge kind of 800 meg download, and you can appreciate if you've got a large number of users, downloading that software, packaging it up, and deploying it out to your users was quite a complex affair. So now with the modern version of Office, it's basically streamed down to the user. It uses kind of the App V type model. And the nice thing about that is that that particular model has a number of benefits. It means that it can be constantly updated with new features. And the nice thing is when you actually install it, you can actually use the application right away. So, and it's not just Microsoft that are moving to this model. There's a whole bunch of vendors using this technology. So what is hybrid then? Well, basically, hybrid is the best of both worlds. Hybrid is the way where I can keep my cake and eat it. Obviously, the customer who's invested a substantial amount of money in hardware and software, maybe they're a financial institution, they need to keep certain types of data on-prem, but they want to put other types of data into the cloud. And you can do that with hybrid. There's a few misconceptions about identity, so Windows Azure Active Directory, which I'm going to sort out tomorrow, by the way. So I'm going to clear up all those kind of misconceptions. An example is you might offload certain mailboxes to the cloud, whereas you might decide to keep an on-prem archive, or vice versa, in fact. So customers have already invested, as I said, in SharePoint, Link, Exchange Online. That's fine. They want to move to the cloud, but they want to maintain a level of coexistence. Maybe it's part of a deployment plan. Maybe if you've got hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of users, this is possibly a good solution. And as I said, maybe there's compliance or legal issues that they need to keep something on-prem. So there's a whole bunch of reasons for this. So key hybrid features, federation trust. So it's amazing when anybody comes on my training, I've written a 5-day course on Office 365 with kind of live labs that we do. And everybody wants to know about two things. Everybody wants to know about ADFS, and everybody wants to know about DirSync, because these are the kind of the key technologies. This is what makes kind of hybrid possible. So that federation trust. And again, there's that misconception, a customer said to me the other week, Andy, I like the idea of Office 365. I like the idea of having single sign-on, but I don't want to put my Active Directory into the cloud. So you're not putting your Active Directory into the cloud. But Andy, that's what Azure Active Directory is, isn't it? Isn't that Active Directory? Azure Active Directory is not Active Directory. It's more like lightweight directory services. And if you think about it, it's a bit like a fishing rod and a hook. So you hook into Active Directory, you hook in certain attributes, okay? And with those attributes, that provides the secure single sign-on features. So you're not basically putting all your eggs in one basket. And the nice thing is you can control which attributes get replicated up to the cloud. You get the integrated admin experience. So out of the box, if you've got Exchange on-prem, you've got Exchange online, you just see this continuous list of mailboxes. For you, the cloud is just another server. It's just an extension of your business. And your users, they look through things like the global address list. They just see a list of users. They don't care. They don't need to know where those users are. It's not important to them. What's important to them is that they can communicate and they can get their data. Also, native mailbox moves. Hey, wouldn't it be cool? You just right-click a mailbox. I want to move this mailbox to the cloud. Absolutely fantastic. And then finally, secure mail flow. So, Andy, what if there's somebody sat outside in the car park with Wireshark and they're trying to tap the network? You can't do that. Because, first of all the mail and the mailboxes themselves are actually all BitLockered. So you've got that data at rest solution. And on the same time, you've got EAP TLS transport layer security. So everything is fully encrypted. The traffic is encrypted. And because you're using Active Directory Federation services and DuraSync, you're using digital certificates. The connection itself requires an SSL connection. So in terms of security, it's pretty good. Okay. So comparing some of the features. Okay. So Andy, if I decide to go with this coexistence idea, do I have to kind of dive in, or can I just put my toe in the water? You can put your toe in the water. Just because you deploy Active Directory Federation services and DuraSync, that doesn't mean that you're in hybrid mode. There's a magic little checkbox that you'll see that you need to click. And it's that checkbox that says, yeah, I want to go into hybrid mode. But hybrid, as you can see, definitely gives you a whole bunch of advantages. Okay, so if you want the rich features, and the thing I would say to you, if you're considering hybrid, again, if you're a consultant, you've really got to ask exactly what the customer wants. It's all very easy to walk in and go, oh yeah, hybrid's perfect for you. But the thing about hybrid, it shouldn't be taken lightly, first of all, and it does require a lot of planning. I can't tell you the number of customers that I've gone to, and they go, oh yeah, we want hybrid. Well, actually, they're only a small company. They don't need it, okay? Or maybe, on the other hand, it is a small company. I did a little bit of work with the lawyers, solicitors in the UK, and they only had 25 employees. But for legal reasons, they wanted single sign-on. They wanted hybrid mode, but they had to maintain a certain mailbox, had to stay on-prem. And again, we could do that model. So preparing to go hybrid. So what are the requirements? Well, first of all, your Active Directory must be running at least 2003 Forest Functional Role. You need to have live DNS, so DNS validation as well. Now, whether you've got a DNS provider, GoDaddy, or somebody like that, that's fine. If you're going to look after your own DNS, absolutely fine. If you're looking after your own DNS, think about the DNSSEC, the DNS security, and all of that as well. You must purchase an external SSL certificate. There's a few gotchas with that, I would say, through experience. You could just buy a standard SSL certificate. They typically come in 1, 3, or 5 years type of durations. Never, ever buy a one-year SSL certificate. That's crazy, okay? Especially if you're a support person. Let's see, anybody support people here? Where's all the support people? Okay, so there's a few of you there. So I would say that never buy a one-year SSL certificate. And the thing about SSL as well is SSL is for what? Why would you use an SSL certificate? Tell me.
To encrypt traffic,
thank you. So when you register your domain, yes, you register your domain in Office 365, mycompany.com, okay? So you need a digital certificate for mycompany.com. And that's fine if you are mycompany.com. But the problem is, if you are a consultant, and you're supporting mycompany.com that has different divisions and different regions and different areas, mycompany.com is useless. Okay? You need to have a wildcard SSL certificate. What does wildcard do? What does it allow you to do in terms of SSL? Shout it out. Subdomain. Thank you. So you can have as many subdomains as you want. And this is very important for deploying Office 365. Because when you deploy it, certainly when you add in a domain, remember what you're doing, you're essentially adding a domain into lightweight directory services. Okay, I'll call it that. I'm not Microsoft. I can tell you exactly what I think and how and what it is for real. So when you add that domain name in, it goes into the Microsoft directory. Now, when you sign up to Office 365, you've got to be really careful with the domain name. Okay? So if you come in with a subdomain and you've got a wildcard certificate, you decide that you don't want that subdomain anymore, that's fine. You can still use the domain name. But if you've used that single domain name and you've made the mistake of, you know, at the end of the trial, you've just let it expire. Never let it expire. Okay, because it's very, very difficult to go back and get Microsoft to remove that. It stays there. So if you ever want to use that domain name again, it can be a nightmare. I'm not saying it can't be done. You can put in a support call. But you can imagine phoning Microsoft saying, yes, I tried Office 365 a year and a half ago with this domain name. Can you imagine the call? So a strong bit of advice, if a customer doesn't decide to go with Office 365 at the moment, then they've trialed it, physically remove the name, the domain name, and delete everything in Azure Active Directory. Because later on, if they come back, at least they can then use that. Okay? All users must have a valid UPN name. Okay? So UPN, user principal name, aka email address. This is how Active, this is the hook that Active Directory Federation services use. Andy, what about other vendors, other software? There's different hooks. There's different technologies. I'll talk about these tomorrow. Active Directory Federation service is just one, by the way. But it's kind of major hook, its major field is that UPN. DirSync, the directory service replication, it's got a password replica. It's got a number of different names. I just call it DirSync. There is a feature in DirSync, it's called Write Back, or Enable Rich Coexistence. You click that checkbox, and that gives you hybrid. So if you install DirSync and ADFS, and you don't click that checkbox, you have simple coexistence. Okay, Andy, can I go back and change it? Of course you can. Okay, DirSync is just an appliance. If you screw it up, you can uninstall it and just reinstall it again. It's not a big issue. Definitely. If you're going to go down the ADFS route, you need to at least have two ADFS servers. Okay? So you need to have that high availability model. Andy, that seems terribly complicated if I'm a small business. Well, the new version of DirSync, you don't need ADFS. So you can actually have password synchronization, and it uses a hashing mechanism. It hashes them. You know, I've not tried it, but just the thought of it puts the cringe of God into me. I'm a security guy, okay? And when you start thinking about past the hash attacks, it's convenient. Yes, it's convenient, but how many times have we put convenience above security? So again, I still maintain I'm a security guy. Active Directory Federation services is the best way to go because you have to physically prove who you are. Online services for Windows PowerShell. So you need to install that PowerShell module, of course. And you also need to install the sign-in assistant as well. Very important there, though, unlike other migration solutions in Office 365, you need to have that. You need to have an on. I'm talking about Exchange here, of course. You need to have that on-prem Exchange server, and that the one particular role is the client access server role. So it's the client access server. If you know Exchange, it's the server that provides the Outlook web access. Yes. So it needs to have that. Okay? Now, folks say to me, Andy, I've got a customer with Exchange 2007. Does that mean I have to go and spend a whole fortune in upgrading? Of course not. Of course not. You don't need to touch their network. You don't need to do anything with their Exchange server. But you do need to bring up to at least 2010 client access server. Okay. So this is basically the deployment steps. Sign up, as I've said, register the domain name, make sure you got a digital certificate, install DuraSync, ADFS, blah, 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 and we're going to go through all of these. What I will say, by the way, is I've in my materials that I'm providing you as part of this training, you can download it. There's tons of white papers, how-to guides, all my slides, all my videos. Just sign up Twitter at Andy Malone, and you'll get access to that. So preparing for hybrid. So what do we need to do to prepare for hybrid mode? Okay. Okay. So preparing for hybrid, I was going to show you this. It's just basically a bunch of websites. So you can go to the Office 365 Support Center. There are a number of tools. In fact, I'll show you the links here. I've actually included them on my presentation. So there's a number of great Techno articles here as well. There's also the Office Deployment Readiness tool, absolutely fantastic tool. And there's also the Exchange online connectivity testing. There's also things like testoffice365.com. There's a whole bunch of websites. I won't bore you to death with those, but you can basically you've got all the links I'll give you. So read the guides. When you sell Office 365 to a customer, make sure the customer knows. Make sure you set their expectations. Especially with things like small business. Remember, you're very limited what you can do with the small business SKUs. Again, really evaluate the customer, because if you go and provide the wrong SKU for the customer, it can be a nightmare moving them. Okay? I'm saying it's not impossible, but it can be a nightmare. So what about the identity architecture? So identity is everything with hybrid. So with a cloud identity, you have a, you know, if I was just Joe Soap, I log on with my Microsoft Online ID. Okay, perfect. Authentication occurs at Microsoft. So when you log on, authentication occurs at Microsoft. They determine passwords policies. They determine password length. They say they control everything. Okay, you have no control. You've got limited control, but not very much. It doesn't require an on-premises server for deployment, okay? The disadvantage is, though, of course, the user needs to remember multiple passwords, okay? This is what it looks like. The other solution, of course, is federated identity. So with federated identity, the user is using the same credentials that they're using online. So these customers who already have Active Directory are using these technologies. Authentication, and this is really important. Microsoft are no longer in the loop here. You control how users log in. It's your password policies. It's your password settings. It's your security settings, group settings, user settings. You have control over that, not Microsoft. Authentication, password policy is stored on-premises. It requires an on-premises DuraSync server, as I've mentioned. And you also need to have that ADFS server. Now, ADFS comes in two flavors, ADFS 2.0. If you've got Windows Server 2008, 2008 R2, I can tell you the version of ADFS which is included in those products is no good. It's out of date. So ADFS is a free download. You can download it, ADFS 2.0. The version that comes with Windows Server 2012 and above is ADFS 2.1. Now, there is a little registry hack that you need to do if you want to use 2.1, but it's very, very easy. And this is basically what it looks like. So it basically means the user doesn't need to know multiple passwords. They can log in perfect. Okay, so you've got single sign-on. So here's Bob, and this is basically how it works. So this is the Microsoft platform here, and you can see that in terms of getting access to the authentication platform here, your users can come in either one of two ways. You can come in using either the admin portal, which you've just seen, or you can use the provisioning, some kind of provisioning system. So once you're through here, you're then authenticated, and you then get access. So no integration, you need to have two passwords. DirSync, or the directory synchronization tool, just basically it's an appliance. You install it, you connect, it gets. You connect, it gets. That's all it does. Okay? It just pulls the data down. Initially, it's all just one way. So unless you click that hybrid option, it's not two-way. Okay? In its most basic form, it goes, it gets data. So you can see you install the appliance, and basically it connects, and it just provisions, creates the user accounts. So in Office 365, in the portal, I can go in and I can manually provision the user accounts. I can manually create them. I can use PowerShell to create those user accounts. Or I can use DirSync. So it kind of just automates the method. It goes, it gets. That's all it does. And you can see it goes, it gets, and my users get access. But there's no directory integration here. They're still using two passwords. It's not single sign-on. Then I go ahead and install an Active Directory Federation server infrastructure. So again, Active Directory, essentially what it, Federation services, what it does, it basically creates this man in the middle, but it's a good man in the middle, okay? And basically we have a digital certificate at one side and another one at the other side. And essentially when you log on, it creates this trust relationship. And this trust relationship is comprised of, you basically create rules, connection rules and acceptance rules. So you basically say which members of a group can log in and so on. So what we have is we have Bob, and Bob logs in. And essentially when he logs in and tries to get access to Microsoft Office, it says, hang on, you need to prove who you are. So basically, it comes through the Active Directory Federation server. Federation server says, ah, yes, Bob, I've got a connection rule for you. Fantastic. Okay, I'm going to... It generates a token for Bob. And this token is called a SAML, Secure Account Markup Language Token. And it then passes this token to Office 365. It looks at the token. It goes, yeah, you're an accepted user here. Here's an accepted token. Passes the token to Bob, and Bob gets access to his resources. So it's actually quite a simple kind of way. Now, if you've got questions, by the way, I'll take the questions at the end, okay? So Windows Azure, or WAD. So what's the difference between WAD and WAD? Okay, WAD, Windows Active Directory, WAD, Windows Azure Active Directory. So basically, we have an identity challenge. So the challenge is how to basically extend your Active Directory into the cloud. And as you can see, it's by using a cloud application. So it's basically using that fishing rod and that hook to hook in to the cloud. Okay? And this is essentially what it does. And it needs an attribute. It needs a mechanism to do that. And one of those mechanisms that Azure uses is that UPN, that user principal name that I mentioned. So this is a Active Directory, Windows Azure Active Directory is a customized version of ADAM, the Active Directory application mode, comprised with SQL, and basically, why is it different to Active Directory? Because you can only have one instance of Active Directory. In Windows Azure, you can have many instances. So basically, if you have an Office 365 account, you're already a Windows Azure Active Directory user. You've already got an instance of your domain in there. Okay. As I say, think of it as like a fish on a hook. That's what I'd say. Okay, so Server in 2012 enables SSO access, as I say. It provides access for a single Active Directory forest. Now, it requires a unique SSL certificate, as I've said, and it needs to do this because it establishes it as a third-party trust relationship. Excuse me. Okay, so let's have a look then at installing Active Directory Federation services. So basically, I've downloaded ADFS here, and I'm starting it up. I'm just going to click on Next, and I'll accept the agreement. And this is where it basically says, okay, do you want to install a Federation server, or do you want to install a proxy? So it's a kind of good practice not to install a Federation server to a public-facing kind of firewall side. So you would use a proxy server. Now, there's a number of devices. For example, UAG, TMG, you could use that. So off it goes, installs the bits. Okay, click on Finish, and we'll start the configuration. Let's have a look first. Okay. So, first of all, of course, we need to manage the certificate. So I'm going to go in here into IIS, and I'm going to create, of course, that important internal SSL certificate. Okay. Next. Okay, so now we need to specify the certificate authority, and this is just internal. So this is just my internal on-prem organization, and just give it a friendly name. I'm just going to call it STS, Secure Token Service, because this is essentially what ADFS actually is. Okay, so certificate's in place. And if you don't do that, by the way, you won't be able to install ADFS. Okay, so once we've done the certificate, of course, we need to set that SSL port up to use port 443. Again, for the purpose of the demo, I didn't need to do this as part of the demo, but I think it's always good to kind of see the prerequisites as well. So you can see I've set the certificate. It's now using port 443. Just close that. So now I can close that down, and now I can start the installation of Active Directory. I can start configuring it. So basically, first thing is, what do I want to do? I want to go ahead and configure it. So do I want to create a new Federation server, or do I want to add an additional server? So if I say a new server, you can create a standalone server or as part of a Federation farm. Never choose a standalone server. Always choose a Federation farm, because then you can add additional servers. And you can see, off it goes. Installs all the bits. Fantastic. Okay, and there we have it. I've now installed Active Directory Federation services. Okay, so of course the next bit is actually configuring the rules. And again, obviously, because of time reasons, that can be quite complex, and it's not this particular session. John Craddock does a great session on that. If you want to know how to do that, I've also included a video on how to do it and a complete guide on how to do it as well. So, authenticating into the cloud with single sign-on. So here's Bob. Bob's on his local computer, and Bob wants to get access to Exchange. So he connects to Exchange Online, and Exchange says, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know you. Okay? So he then tries to knock onto the door of the authentication platform. I don't know you either. Look, we have a trust relationship here. You need to talk to your local server. So he knocks on the door of his ADFS server, checks the claim rules that have been provided. Yes, you are a valid user. Yes, you have a certificate. Yes, you meet the requirements. And what happens, he's generated a token. So he's provided with a SAML token. And he takes that SAML token, and if you look at the token, by the way, you'll see he's got its UPN, his UPN on it, and a unique number. So he takes that SAML token to the authentication platform. It checks it. It says, yes, you are a valid user. Here's your authentication token. Takes that token back and then passes it to Exchange Online. And, of course, he then gets access. So provisioning users' options, of course, there are a number of different options that you can choose. You can automate the method. So typically a large medium to large size entity will do this. Okay, so that's the three different types of doing it. So I mentioned DirSync. I keep talking about DirSync. What is DirSync? Well, DirSync essentially enables the coexistence. It provisions objects in Office 365 with the same email address. What do I mean by provisioning, by the way? Well, for example, here's a manual way of provisioning. So I'm just going to go into Office 365. And if I go into my users and groups here, you can see I've got a user. I'm just going to delete that user, actually, because I have a... I want to delete this guy. Yes. By the way, when you delete a user in Office 365, it goes into the deleted users container, and it stays there for 30 days, by the way. I'm just going to manually provision some users here, and then I'll let you see it the automated way. So you can either, as you can see, I can provision manually here by adding in the username. I'm just going to go back. I don't want to manually do this. I want to automate this. I can do a bulk add here. So if I click on the bulk add, I've actually pre-prepared a spreadsheet. So if I just show you this little spreadsheet here, I'm a friend of friends, by the way. So I've just created this very, very simple kind of spreadsheet here. Okay. So what I want to do is I'm going to go into Office 365, and you can download a blank CSV file, and you can download a sample one. I'm just going to browse to my spreadsheet, and I will just scroll down, and here it is. And you can see it's just basically a CSV file. I'm going to open that up. I'm going to go next. And you can see four users brought in, and it kind of populates everything. Important, by the way, you need to set up a location, and you need to license the user, especially with bulk import tools. And many people forget that you actually have to license the user. I'm going to go next, licensing them. Yeah, that looks pretty good. Okay, so I've successfully created my users here, and my users are all in here. So if I go into, let's say, Joey Tribbiani here, in his fields, you can see that, I can go into the details, and everything's been populated for me. So all his settings, everything has been kind of pre-populated. And, you know, that's fine. Using this method is fine if you've got a small number, medium number of users. But if you've got a large number of users, then you probably want something a little bit more simple. And this is really where this kind of technology comes in. This provides coexistence. It's a free tool, totally free. In its most simple format, it provides a global address list for all your users between the on-premise and the global address list that's in the cloud. You can use it in both simple and hybrid deployments. It provides mail routing between the on-prem and also in the cloud as well. And remember what we're talking about, rich coexistence. And the examples that I use here, I talk about Exchange. If you're using SharePoint, if you're using Link, it's irrelevant. It's the same technology. By the way, if you're talking about any other applications that you need to integrate with the cloud, these are the two kind of key components from Microsoft. So implementation, a one-way sync is it just goes, it gets. It goes, it gets. If you go with the two-way sync, this is the hybrid deployment. So it requires that Exchange server, client access server. Oh, by the way, did I mention that that license is free, by the way? So if you're moving to Office 365, they give you that license, okay, for that client access server. Only one thing I would say is, officially, you can't move back to one-way sync. So it's kind of an irreversible action. That's not entirely true, but for the most part, it is true. Okay? Then the cloud becomes the master for certain properties. So things like safe senders lists, coexistence, things like that. This is interesting, actually. So DirSync syncs every 3 hours by default, every 180 minutes. You can change it. So here's the instructions on how to change it. Tomorrow I'm going to do a full demo of that, but I just thought I'd stick that in there just now. So you can basically navigate to the directory, open it up. It's FIM, Forefront Identity Manager, and you can actually set that parameter, set time interval. So and you can change that. Obviously, don't have it too short, because otherwise you'll start having problems. But 3 hours for a fairly large corporate is a pretty good time. I mentioned that the hook thing. So when you start going into hybrid mode, obviously Exchange needs to talk to Exchange Online. So it also hooks into additional Active Directory attributes, which are listed here. Okay. So once it's hooked into these attributes, then you can start moving that mailbox back and forth. And in terms of installing DirSync, really, really easy. Essentially, you just go to the portal here, and you can see it's a pretty much a 10-step process. So the first thing is you need to activate Active Directory synchronization, and then you need to install and configure the DirSync tool. So again, just go and download that DirSync tool. By the way, DirSync is a few years old now. This is the 64-bit version. It only supports 64-bit. You can't install this on a domain controller, but you must install it on a domain-connected server. Okay? So it needs to be a 64-bit server. If you still have customers that have the 32-bit version, that expires on the 1st of October this year. So now, if you get that message, what you find is... you know, if there was an error, you can re-download it and try again. So once it's ready to go, once it's installed, you put in your Microsoft Online credentials. This process, by the way, connecting to the cloud can actually take up to 24 hours. So you'll forgive me for showing you this as a demo here. So you'll see a quick... then it asked me to put in my local credentials. Okay, and then you'll see a quick error message. This is where it's telling me I've got to wait 24 hours. And there we go. Enable rich or Exchange hybrid deployment. So I'm going to click on that checkbox. looks good. Okay, so next. And I now want to synchronize everything. So off it goes, and it starts that initial sync, okay? This is where it's telling me that it's verifying the synchronization. So once that's complete, I can then go to my Active Directory, or rather my online services, and you can now see my accounts have synced. So you can see I now get a status of synced with Active Directory, okay? So everything is looking good. Okay, so I now have ADFS, and I now have DirSync in place. So when we talk about hybrid really is one giant leap for IT. It's a big step forward, but it's a very exciting step forward. Again, Andy, how can I move to hybrid mode? So again, you can see it supports a number of different versions of Microsoft Exchange. Now, if you have different versions or different mail clients, you're going to go to companies and they're going to have Novell group-wise. They're going to have Lotus Notes. I see it all the time. Okay, this is a migration. Okay, this is what we call a migration. So there's no coexistence here. Now, typically when you migrate these users across, things like that's you're using kind of basic LDAP migration. What you need to do to remember, you need to actually create those user accounts and mailboxes first, and you basically migrate the material into that. This is different because this populates everything for you. So this is very, very easy to do. So you can see that we're talking about 2010 hybrid. It supports 2003, 2007, 2010, and also 2013 as well. So this shows you the different types of options here. So a typical IMAP migration, a cutover migration, so that company that's got that small business server, you know, that they migrate across to Office 365, and they once the migration's done, they just pull the cord, and that's it. It's done. Okay. So there's no coexistence required, whereas in hybrid mode, you really do need that kind of rich coexistence. Good advice, definitely pilot Office 365. Set it up in a demo environment, trial it. There's some. Actually, if you go to the Office 365 booth, they've got a new demo kit. It's a 5-DVD set. There's a brand new version just out this week. Okay, it's got a whole set of virtual machines. Go and speak to a guy called Alistair Spears up there. He's a great guy. Large migrations, of course, plan. There's a number of planning tools out there. I can't tell you, before you walk in on customer premises, there's so much that needs to be done. Okay, again, plan it. And the idea is, ultimately, that you shouldn't really have a disruption in service. So the thing about hybrid mode, the nice thing about it, is you're in single sign-on. So the user's already in Office 365. So, and then you can selectively move their mailbox when you're ready to move it. So there's no disruption to the user. That's the great thing about this technology. So coexist, public folders. Public folders, you probably noticed, are back in Exchange. Although public folders is not entirely the correct name. It's actually what we call SkyDrive Pro. So SkyDrive Pro is basically a folder in SharePoint Online, okay? So it's different to typical SkyDrive that you know. Legacy emailed is enabled for on-business solutions as well. And again, everything's fully integrated with it. Perfect for things like mergers, acquisitions, and so on. Highly configurable, okay? And everything's manageable through the tools that you're already using. That's the great thing about this. What's the end user experience like? They don't need to remember multiple passwords. Andy, this sounds good, but you know we're in a high security environment. Do I have to just use passwords? Of course not. There's other mechanisms. There's really good third-party solutions. I know a government customer in the US that's using smart cards, and they're using a Retina device to actually access their Office 365. So it's very, very customizable. Okay. One thing I would say, if you're moving, obviously you've got your mailbox, OST files, you need to recreate those. You can't bring in an OST file. Also, if you're moving or migrating, not so much moving, but if you're migrating mailboxes, Office 365 has an attachment limit, importing of 35 meg. So just be aware of that. So you need to clean up the customer's mail first. And also remember, outgoing, any attachments have a 25 meg limitation as well. And remember to activate the user in the portal. So yes, you'll create the new user, but you still need to activate the user there. So on-premises or hybrid deployment, there's now the hybrid configuration wizard. So 2 years ago, it was all PowerShell, PowerShell, PowerShell. Now, there's nice, easy wizards that do it. If I can, this is notes from the field. Wizards are always problematic. Do yourself a favor. Learn the PowerShell tools. The PowerShell commands are so obvious to learn. There's a small set of PowerShell tools. They are your best friend. So GUIs, in my opinion, yes, they're convenience, but they're also problematic. This is great, by the way. This is the Exchange 2013 Deployment Assistant. So again, this basically walks through the whole process, and it tells you actually what you need. So essentially, you go in, add your credentials, and you can either do it here or you can do it through PowerShell. And it does a check. So it checks the customer's infrastructure. Do you meet the requirements? Do you have ADFS? Is your digital certificate valid? And I mentioned digital certificates, by the way. And I mentioned don't use the one-year certificate. I would always go for a 3 or 5 year certificate, but always make a note of when that certificate expires. Never let an SSL certificate expire. It's a nightmare, especially in Office 365. Well, not in especially, but in any kind of cloud provider. The migration tool itself is launched from the Exchange Admin Console. And again, you can see you just click on that, and you basically just create a new migration. So you just basically create what we call a new move request. These are the PowerShell commandlets. These are the hybrid PowerShell commandlets. Yeah, there's maybe a few more, but these are the key ones that you need to know. And they're so intuitive. And again, I'm providing you with lots of documentation that you can get from my SkyDrive on this. Other thing that you can do, of course, the Federation Gateway. So basically, we've spoke about ADFS and DuraSync. So when you connect Exchange Online to Exchange On-Prem, it uses a service called the Exchange Federation Gateway. And you can see if you, well, you can't see at the moment, but if you have a look at the certificate or the actual agreement there, you can see that there's this handshaking process going on. And it's all about this trust mechanism that we've set in place with ADFS and our SSL certificates. So once we have that organizational relationship in place, then you can start controlling how your mail flows in Office 365, okay? So you can have that shared SMTP namespace. It basically treats the on-prem and in-cloud as just one single organization. Considerations. Again, as I've mentioned, things that you've got to watch out for, this really only supports a single forest. So, Andy, what about if I've got customers that have got multiple forests? So Microsoft.com, Novell.com, HP.com, what in that case? Because, you know, many of you are going to be consultants in this area. There is typically or traditionally, I would say to you, that's a support call. You need to speak to, and the support guys are great. They do a great job, by the way. There is a multi-forest tool. I must confess, I don't know if it's out yet, but I know it's inbound that will help you do this. Okay, so there is mechanisms in place for that multi-forest support there. Just to let you know that when you migrate in, the system has a limit of 20,000 objects. I'm talking about users' computers. Now, if you feel that that's not enough, just phone Microsoft, say, hey, you know, we've got a large directory here. No problem. They'll just up the button for you. Remember, it's not just a flat service. That's the nice thing about Office 365. You know, at least when you have an on-prem kit, you can tweak it, you can customize it. And what I've discovered over the last few years is that Microsoft are not just, you don't just flick a switch and they're this faceless kind of organization that many people think they are. You can actually speak to somebody, you know, this is not right. And the support for Office 365, I would say, is outstanding. I don't know if you've had experience of it, but when I've called them, I've had no problems. Other things, UPN. You must have a user, every user account must have a user principal name. So in Active Directory, you need to put in that UPN name. Now, another issue is, of course, with domain names. So if you've got a customer that's got a Active Directory, which is using, let's say, a .local domain name. So .local, of course, is no good. So that you would need to go into, first of all, register your domain name, your live domain name. You would need to go into Active Directory domains and trusts, and you would need to basically add in another UPN suffix there. And then you would go into each of your user accounts and add in that UPN. And then the user will log in. Problems with DirSync. If you get problems with DirSync, I can tell you 9 times out of 10, it's because you've made a typo. Okay? Any problems with Office 365, it's typically because somebody's typed something wrong in a PowerShell script. Your domain name is wrong. Your certificate is not correct, or it's out of date or something like that. So typically human error causes issues with this. In terms of network security, again, these are the ports that it uses. Again, don't use the open ports. Use the secure ports. One thing to take into account is bandwidth. And I know that sounds silly. I did tech ed a couple of years ago in Durban, and we ran an Office 365 session, and we were announcing Windows Azure. And a little guy came up to me at the end, and he says, by the way, you do know that we've got a maximum of a 2 meg pipe. I went, really? So he says, yeah, we're not ready for it yet. So again, if you're moving to the cloud, it's all very well the portal. That's not the problem. The problem is migrating, moving the stuff to the cloud. You'll find that when you start bringing mailboxes and moving mailboxes, Microsoft throttles the service at source. So again, you need to take that into account, and you need to give yourself enough time for that. They probably don't want me saying that, but I'm telling you the truth. Hybrid considerations, you must have a minimum of Exchange 2010 with Service Pack 3. 2013, obviously, for the best experience. Outlook 2003 is not supported because it doesn't support the archive folders. Unified messaging, of course, so again, with Link. License, yeah, so I've mentioned all of those things. You also need to make sure that you've set up an auto-discover records and also an SPF record in terms of DNS. But again, I've provided you with lots of documentation on that. Exchange Federation, self-signed certificates can be used. They can be, but I don't. Personally, I'd like a bit more control over it. So think about Exchange Web Services. Think about that client access server. So you want to make sure that that's in place as well. And again, you also need to know the fully qualified domain name of your hybrid server. So check. This is all my check boxes. So basically, how is Mailflow going to be configured? It says Foppy, but of course it's now Exchange Online Protection. So this is kind of a step-by-step. So prepare, deploy, the bits, certificates, and then configure the protocols. So once you've basically set all these features up, that's it. You're then in essentially hybrid mode. And then you run the hybrid configuration wizard. Okay. So once those mailboxes have been through, this is basically going hybrid. So you can, as I say, you can use PowerShell, but you can also use the configuration wizard as well. So the first thing that you need to configure is that organizational relationship. So we basically fire up that trust, and you can see that this is just, the nice thing about this is it's actually showing you the PowerShell commands that it's doing. So once that's set up, we can then, you can see it adds the bits into Active Directory, so that hybrid configuration is ready to go. And we can now actually go in and we can start managing that hybrid. So the first thing you need to do, of course, is add in your organization. So we bring that Forest in, and you can see I'm just calling this Exchange Online. And once that's in, we can now start the actual configuration. So you need to put in, obviously, your credentials, your online credentials, and also your internal credentials as well. You need to specify the domains that you want to bring, domain or domains that you want to bring through. You'll get this checkbox, domain proof. Okay, so you, before you do this, you will get a DNS record, a big, long, unique number. So you need to create that text record in DNS, and this is your domain proof. So when Office 365 goes to see if you own the domain, it needs to talk to your DNS server. So once that's been verified, you can then move on and start adding in your servers. Then you can start saying, okay, your mail flow settings, obviously it looks for that SSL certificate. So once you've got all of those things in place, that's it. You're now fully in hybrid mode, and you can now see that it's added in all the objects. And you get log files, fairly detailed log files, perfect for PowerShell as well. And it's, again, it's great for troubleshooting. So you can see here I'm in Exchange. So I've just gone into hybrid. So if I go into users and groups here, and you can see that in my users and groups, all my user accounts are now synced. So I'm now in hybrid mode. I've got Holly here. So great. Now what I'm going to do is if I go to admin, I can go to Microsoft Exchange. And in Exchange, I can see all my mailboxes are here. And you can see that Holly's, I had Holly actually on an Exchange server, and she's now successfully moved across. So what I did just before the demo is I right-clicked and I said new move request, and you can see now that her mailbox is there. Cool. So you can see that in hybrid, you've got Exchange on-premises and you've got Exchange 365 in the cloud. But for the end user, it's completely irrelevant. So they just see a standard, simple global address list. And they've got basically access to absolutely everything. Okay. So, again, if you're responsible for hybrid, these are the things that you need to get in place. So, Andy, what are the gotchas? What are the gotchas to watch out for? Plan and prepare, definitely. Read the deployment guides. Make sure, in my experience, the two biggest gotchas are certificates and DNS. So people get DNS. Now, if you're a small business, DNS is pretty simple because Microsoft can host your DNS. Whereas if you're actually managing the DNS yourself, it can be a little bit more complex. And there is a bit more work. So you tend to find that the P plans, the small business plans, it uses a very nice simple wizard, click, 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 and it tells you what to do. Whereas the E plans, there's lots of typing and copying and pasting and so on. So you need to get that into play. Clean house. So before you move a customer to Office 365, get rid of all the crap. So you definitely want to remove any mailboxes, that are not necessary. Move user accounts that are not necessary. Watch out for those mail attachments that I mentioned, you know, the size. Yes, so I just said that. DNS records, and make sure that you've got the auto-discover. Again, I've given you a complete step-by-step guide in my documentation. Make sure as well, before you even start moving, that they meet the hardware and software requirements for Office 365. Patch, patch, patch. Make sure everything's updated and so on. Deploy ADFS and DuraSync, as you've just seen. And deploy Exchange at least 2010 with a client access server role. Again, it's free. You can deploy 2013, 2010. Never let your digital certificates expire. This can be an absolute nightmare. And remember that domain deletion issue that I mentioned at the beginning. So never just let a domain expire if you want to use that domain name again. It can be very, very difficult. And drink lots of coffee and Red Bull, okay? Because you'll definitely need it. All right. I've given you a whole bunch of lists here. So all those tools and features that I mentioned, these are all kind of the top tools out there. There's some great third-party tools as well. This is an evolving technology, remember. So there's some really kind of cool stuff. And again, I've provided you with links there. So what have we done? Well, we've looked at the changing world of software. We talked about what is hybrid. We spoke about why you should go with hybrid mode. And also we've talked a little bit about the planning and the implementation of it as well. As I mentioned, if you want all my extras, all you need to do is sign up to Andy Malone. I'm going to be in Hall 4.1 this afternoon at 3:15 with my social networking session. The dangers of social networking, a journey to the dark side of social networking. So it would be great if you could come along there. And again, there's related content. But I really hope you've learned something and you've enjoyed it. Any questions, just come and speak to me afterwards. Send me an email on Twitter or something like that, and I'll be happy to help you. But I really appreciate you coming along, and have a great time at TechEd. Okay, I'm Andy Malone. Thank you so much. Okay.